Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Today we continue our discussion about how copying influences creativity. Hi friends, welcome back to Advanced Studio Classroom. This is our second day of our ethics article for February. It's the 5th of this month, and we're on page 13 of your Advanced magazine. I'm Naomi, and once again in the studio with me, first of all, welcome back, Bill.
Hi, Naomi. Hello, listeners. Great to be back for day two of this article. I love it.
What is our article called?
Is copying theft or innovation?
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you made up your mind about the answer yet?
It's both.
Oh.
It depends on the situation.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So it's not definitely both, but maybe it does depend.
It depends. Yeah. It depends. In some cases, there is some creativity in innovation, and in other cases, it's just blatant copying with no intent to get any better.
Right.
Just copying.
Okay. And that's definitely a problem.
Yeah, it is a problem because with blatant copying, it just deters innovation, because then people who put time and effort into creating stuff, they are not rewarded for their time and effort. And if you're not going to get rewarded for that, then, well, for a lot of people, they might just decide they're going to go fishing instead of work on developing something new.
Okay. Yeah. That's a good point. Mm-hmm. And as fun as fishing is, then they're not working very hard.
And the way the world loses then is because then we lose creativity and lose new ideas then if we don't protect this.
Definitely. Now, also joining us again is Craig Shaver. We're thrilled that you're with us.
Well, good to be back, Naomi.
And Bill. Yeah, and we really appreciate your own take on this issue. And you have some interesting perspectives.
Well, being a pilot, it's very important to have innovation in our industry because it leads to economics, better economics. We can fly airplanes farther and cheaper and keep your ticket prices down.
Which we appreciate. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. But the most important thing, though, is to make sure you get there safely.
Right.
So there is always innovation in the area of safety.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it's a collaborative. It's a dual effort by many of the manufacturers. They get together and say, let's try this. Let's try that. And what you have is basically walking up a ladder of safety. One manufacturer will be innovative and give some new technology an opportunity to be used, and we find out it greatly enhances safety. Then the other manufacturer says, well, I think I can do a little bit better on that too. Mm-hmm. I'll tweak what he just did, and we'll have something a little bit better.
Okay, so they do sort of copy, but they're making slight adjustments, and it actually does serve the whole industry in the end.
Yes, it does. And that's true actually for many different, what we'll see today, many different areas too of society.
Okay. One of the things we talked about yesterday is how innovation is kind of changing. The way it happens today is a bit different from how it happened maybe 100 years ago in most cases.
Yeah. And maybe 100 years ago, we were talking about developing physical products, coming up with a better widget, we might say, a better tool. Whereas today, so much of the innovation is it's intellectual. We're talking about applications on your phones, software, computer programs. It's so much more intellectual rather than the physical innovation.
Okay. So it's less that idea of one person slaving away in his shed trying to find that brilliant moment, right?
Exactly.
Okay. But as we'll get into today's article or today's reading, we'll discover that actually this sort of imitation as creativity has existed maybe for longer than we realize. So let's start with our reading on page 13 of your magazine.
Borrowed inspiration. Once we look, we see examples all around us. Thomas Edison's light bulb imitated elements from a dozen earlier bulbs. Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet borrowed from earlier writers. And West Side Story, in turn, drew heavily from Shakespeare. This kind of copying and tweaking often leads to more choice in the marketplace, many variations on a theme, and more competition, which is good for consumers. Copying can also drive the process of invention, as competitors strive to stay ahead. And copying can serve as a powerful form of advertising for originators, one that carries weight because it is authentic. Copying may even expand a market by creating a trend.
So I do like the heading for this section. It's called Borrowed Inspiration. And I often borrow inspiration from all kinds of things, for article ideas, for writing ideas, for photography ideas. Of course, this happens. I think it might be fair to argue that probably none of our thoughts are completely unique.
That is a very good point, Naomi. It is almost impossible to be completely unique or pure in our ideas, because if that were the case, that would mean that we would not take in any information around us as we walk around the world, as we talk to people. It's impossible.
Right, and that's not how we're made. We're supposed to be inspired and encouraged by each other and rub off on each other and give each other ideas. And once we start to look for this kind of thing in the world of innovation, we actually can find a lot of examples.
Just look at Thomas Edison. He was the first inventor of the light bulb, and he didn't invent the light bulb overnight. It took months and months and months of trial and error, trying different types of filaments, which is the part that lights up, before he actually got one to work and work consistently.
Mm-hmm. And this article makes it sound like actually, even that idea of some kind of light bulb, he wasn't the first one to come up with that thought. He was just the first person to do it effectively.
Yeah, he was not the only person working on a light bulb at this time trying to develop it. This example also made me think of two things. Of course, flight, because Craig's here. The Wright brothers were not the only people working on flight. And Henry Ford was not the only person working on developing automobiles. And so those, the Wright brothers and the Fords and all the people that they were around, they borrowed ideas from each other, stole things. Yeah.
Even the aircraft manufacturers get together and they have joint symposiums and they share new innovations in technology.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing this, one manufacturer will try something new and realize this is good for safety or good for economics in operating the airplane. Then the other manufacturer says, well, we've got a better idea. And by using better ideas, they can go ahead and take technology one step further. They can tweak what the other manufacturer just did and say, we can do it even better. And then the next go around, the other manufacturer will go ahead and take another step further.
Mm-hmm.
This increases the safety, it decreases your ticket costs, and greatly improves the comfort of the passenger in an aircraft.
Right. So this has been happening. It continues to happen today, but it has been happening for a long time. And in certain cases, like Bill was saying, or even the ones that we mentioned here, Thomas Edison, the Wright brothers, Henry Ford, sometimes it's almost just luck, the person who ends up kind of getting most of the credit for some kind of innovation.
Luck, timing, attention. And one guy that has gotten attention for a long time is William Shakespeare. He was even borrowing information from people.
Absolutely. Yeah. Actually, almost none of Shakespeare's stories were original stories. Mostly he retold stories that people were already quite familiar with. But then in turn, of course, other people have imitated Shakespeare as well, right, Craig?
Well, just look at West Side Story. It drew heavily from Shakespeare. And this musical has been used as a platform for other musicals, too.
Right.
Other people are borrowing from the same type of idea.
Exactly. And it's interesting how it goes around in this kind of loop. And that's often true in the arts, in literature and musicals and so on, where you'll have one original kind of story that gets retold in one way, and then someone adapts that, and then they do another version of it, and then a song from that goes on an album, and all kinds of things. So, of course, this happens all the time. And as we continue there in line 17, Bill.
Yeah, now this is one of the positives of it. It says this kind of copying and tweaking often leads to more choice in the marketplace.
Okay, which is one of those positive sides of this kind of collaboration. Copying and tweaking, we've used that word a little bit. What do we mean by that?
Well, of course, copying, we're making an exact copy, a duplicate of something, but actually then tweaking we get into is where we make some minor adjustments, some minor improvements or changes to something.
Okay, good. Then we say here, many variations on a theme. And I like that because of course, it's a musical term. Any of you who've studied piano like I did know that a lot of composers will start with a very simple, basic melody, and then they'll change it. They'll put it into another key. They'll add different flourishes and embellishments, and they take that same theme and they do it 8 different ways, and each of those ways sounds a little different and yet a little familiar. And so if we think about this sort of imitation as almost a pathway to more creativity, we can see that it can be a very, very good thing. And here it says it also leads not only to more choice, but also more competition. Is that a good thing, Craig?
Competition is always a good thing because it creates allows for innovation. It also allows the public or the consumer more choices.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. And so copying also does what?
Also drives the process of invention as competitors strive to stay ahead. So, again, this comes in the tweaking part where people will take a certain idea and they want to make it better so they can add their own little touches, their own little changes to strive ahead, move forward, reach higher.
Okay. Again, we see that word drive, so the idea of moving forward and being sort of pushed forward or propelled forward, that's a great thing. And then we see copying can also serve as
a powerful form of advertising for originators, one that carries the weight because it is authentic. Mm-hmm. Authentic being something that is without – it's actually claimed to be genuine. This is the original. Sometimes we think of, you know, give me a Kleenex. Okay, what is a Kleenex? Kleenex is one of the first tissue manufacturers, but now that has become a general term.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's a brand name. For instance, you give the example of a brand name, and Kleenex would be the authentic, the original brand, but certainly there are thousands of other copies of that. But still, it actually helps Kleenex stay in consumer awareness, public awareness.
It does. At the same time, though, it also lowers the price because other people call themselves basically – they provide the same service as Kleenex – but at a cheaper price because to buy the original, the authentic Kleenex is going to cost you a little bit more money.
But a lot of people still buy that original because they think, well, it's the best.
Well, right? There's quality. So, you know, a lot of times we think of quality products such as Apple, Samsung. Yeah. These are some of the originators. Therefore, that must be the best.
I could think of an example of, for instance, in the music industry, Naomi, or even in the entertainment industry. A lot of times bands or singers will redo an older song from 10, 20, or 30 years ago. And it's interesting what happens is that by the new version may actually resurrect the career of the person that did the original. That person's mm-hmm. long gone and forgotten. But then all of a sudden somebody does a version and
right.
ta-da, they've got new life.
Yeah. True. Most of my generation wasn't very familiar with Journey until Glee started doing covers of their songs.
Right.
So
right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And moving on to the final point in this paragraph, copying can even expand a market. And I think this is a fascinating point as well. How can it do that?
Well, it can, first off, through the competition and development of new products, it actually, in many cases, can lower the price and make the product available to more consumers.
Okay.
That's one way it can do it.
But here it also says that it can create a trend.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that goes beyond just the basics of economy, of like good sales prices and good variety. And it comes down to what's cool, mm-hmm. right? And if enough people start to create something, then everyone wants it.
You see that in the area of clothes.
Definitely.
Every 4 or 5 years, it seems like the same clothes are coming back into vogue.
Yeah. And then everyone has to make a copy of this kind of boots that are so cool. And it actually creates more popularity for the original as well.
Yeah. And so, you know, for instance, when the iPhone came out originally, there was a very limited market, you know, here in Taipei. Not many people had iPhones, but then you had other manufacturers like HTC and Samsung and other ones. They were coming out with their models. Within a very short period of time, everybody had a smartphone.
Right. And so I also think of, you know, you meet your friend and they have some device and they show you the cool thing it can do. And then you think, oh, I want something like that. But you don't really, you might not be paying attention to the brand name because what you really want is the function. And now that that's become something you're aware of and you're excited about, you start to look for that to purchase. So I think this is a great point as well about copying. And in the rest of our article for today, we're going to see some more specific examples of how this can work in different industries. And I'm excited to talk about this. So let's continue on the second column on page 13.
Cuisine. We can see this dynamic best by looking at industries in which copying is legal, where our intellectual property laws do not reach. A great example is cuisine. Surprisingly, chefs have almost no rights in their creations. Recipes can be legally copied by anyone, including a competitor. It happens all the time. The world of cuisine nonetheless remains highly creative. And many great chefs believe openness and the freedom to tweak the work of others is what makes contemporary cuisine so vital. In their statement on the new cookery, Thomas Keller and Farhan Adria argue for full acknowledgement for culinary inventors, but also declare their readiness to share ideas and information. Design. The same is true for the designs of typographic fonts. The look of the letters used to make printed material. There are more than 250,000 such designs, and they can be freely copied, as was the case with Arial, familiar to all Microsoft users. Arial is a knockoff of Helvetica, perhaps the only font to be the subject of a documentary. All the copying hasn't stopped the creation of new fonts.
So our article on copying and theft, is it theft or innovation? Is imitation truly the sincerest form of flattery? We've been discussing specifically technology, Samsung and Apple and other makers of tablet devices. But here we're seeing some different examples, some totally other industries where we're discussing the issue of copying. And so what is the first one that we're looking at?
We're looking at cuisine.
What's cuisine?
Cuisine. It's eating. We're talking about food, the preparation of food, the presentation of food.
Yes. Okay. So this is an exciting field, of course. Everyone loves food. And why are we looking at this particular field?
Well, we can see this dynamic best by looking at industries in which copying is legal and where our intellectual copy or our intellectual property laws do not reach. That's why we're looking at this. Okay. The laws don't cover this. And so it's we see this dynamic. That's a good vocab word.
Mm-hmm. So a dynamic is a force that produces movement or change. And, of course, when we say we can see this dynamic, we're referring back to what we were just talking about in the last few sentences of the previous paragraph of how copying can really work in a positive way for a market. Now, in certain industries, copying is legal, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And so here a great example they say is cuisine. And I didn't realize that that was true in this industry.
Well, look at the TV programs you see now, the reality programs, Chef Wars. You have different chefs come together. There's so many ways. I mean, there's only so many ways, basically, you can produce a chicken breast. You can present a chicken breast. But what we've done here is we've gone ahead and allowed chefs the ability to take somebody else's idea and go a step further to increase the presentation, to increase the taste, okay, or to change the taste. A good example was dumplings. We serve dumplings on the airplane. We have steamers for them. The dumpling is placed on top of a slice of carrot. One day I was given some dumplings, and they tasted much different. And I said to my chief purser, "What did you do? This is really different. It's unique." And she goes, "Well, instead of using a carrot, I used a slice of lemon."
Oh, interesting.
So the taste of lemon permeated, carried through the dumpling itself, and it was a whole different experience.
Right. Okay, very interesting. So that's a great example. I've even seen reality shows where they ask the chefs, you know, try to copy this recipe. Just smell it, taste it, and then try to make your own version of it because they actually encourage that in this field.
Yeah, as you see there, Naomi, recipes can be legally copied by anyone, including a competitor in cuisine. It happens all the time.
Which could be frustrating, I'm sure, because, you know, you want your place to be the only place where you can get that famous lasagna or those fantastic dumplings. But actually, this can be a really positive thing in this world of cuisine.
Well, it offers more options. And like Craig had mentioned, you get these slight variations on something that might be better than the thing you had before. Even with all of this copying, the world of cuisine nonetheless remains highly creative.
Okay. And it says here that in line 9, that many great chefs believe what?
In openness. Mm-hmm. They want the freedom to tweak the work of other people, other chefs. And by doing this, it makes the contemporary cuisine so vital.
Okay. The contemporary cuisine is vital. What do we mean by that?
Well, vital means it's important. That's what vital means. But in this case, it's vital. It's important to the development, the ongoing development of contemporary cuisine, which is often a fusion of many different culinary types, you know, Italian, Greek, French. Mm-hmm. It's a mixture often.
Okay. And it reminds me of how even here in Taipei, we have a Niu Rou Mian festival where everyone brings their own recipes, you know, and they say, oh, try mine. It's the same dish, but there are so many interesting ways to present it and create it, little ways to tweak it. Mm-hmm. And they're all really delightful. There's different things to enjoy. And we hear from some experts right here, don't we, Craig?
Yes, Thomas Keller and Ferran Adria argue that for full acknowledgement for culinary inventors. What that is, give credit where credit is due. But they also declare that their readiness to share ideas and information. So, yes, tell other people, this is what I developed. However, feel free to go ahead and change it.
Exactly. So those culinary inventors, they're connected with cooking, so like the chefs and so on that create something. If you copy them, you should give them credit for what you've done. You have to tell people, oh, this is so-and-so's mm-hmm. recipe that I've adapted.
Yeah, it's only fair to say, oh, I got this idea from Shaver's restaurant down the street. You know, I have to credit Craig for this idea.
Right.
You know, don't just say, oh, this is my creation.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yes, and I actually do this on a more personal level with my friends where I'll say, oh, it's my mother's recipe, but I added coconut, you know, or something. And it makes it kind of more fun, like, oh, this is a recipe I got from someone, but then I had this idea. And it's a fun way to just maybe challenge yourself to be a little bit creative.
Mm-hmm.
The next example that we have is a little bit different from the kitchen. We're going sort of back to computers, aren't we?
Yeah, this is not something we normally would think about. But we're talking about design here, this section. The same is true for the designs of typographic fonts. So, you know, the look of the letters that you're used to make printed material.
Okay. And, of course, we're looking at a font right now, several on this page. And so we're all familiar with fonts. But could you tell which one is which? Can you tell one font from the other?
You know, I can tell
some.
I mean, I'm limited as far as how many I can discern, 50 or maybe, you know, 70. I don't know. But I have to actually look at the list, right? Now,
oh, okay.
I mean, I'm not saying I can name them. I can tell you this is different from that.
Oh, okay.
That's
okay.
What I'm saying. I don't have the names memorized.
Okay.
But I can identify differences.
But the word processors, they now allow you to see the name and the font. And if you want a particular font, you can go by the name, or if you just want something pleasing to your eye or maybe the other person's eye, the reader's eyes, then you can see what it's going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
But when they talk about 250,000 such designs, the nuances, the subtleties and change are so small to have that many.
Definitely. My mom has actually created her own font. She's a graphic designer. And learning about that from her was so interesting. But many of these fonts are very, very close to each other. And it's almost impossible to tell the difference. And even when I look at a font, I can say, well, it looks kind of like Garamond, or it looks a bit like Georgia, but I'm not totally sure. And we see in this paragraph part of the reason for that.
Yeah, you can see that because of all those designs, 250,000, then we move on to see they can be freely copied, as was the case with Arial, familiar to all Microsoft users.
Yes, Arial is the font where we see the writer's name in just here on page 12. If you're unfamiliar, that's it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what happened with Arial? How was it created?
Well, it's a knockoff. It took Helvetica first, and then they made subtle changes to Helvetica and called itself Arial.
Okay, so even Arial, this famous font, is not an original creation. Mm. And Helvetica, of course, is a very well-known font. They actually created a documentary about Helvetica. So if you are into design at all, perhaps you've heard of that or seen it. But yes, even Arial was a knockoff of Helvetica. However, what do we learn in the end of that paragraph?
All of this copying has not stopped the creation of new fonts.
That's true. I'm constantly seeing new fonts appear, actually, in different programs, online for free. You know, there's a lot of different fonts available out there. It's quite interesting. It's an art form in and of itself.
Well, you had talked about your mother creating a font. And in fact, I believe it was last month, we talked about the map maker in Texas. And he created his own font for his maps.
That's right. I forgot about that.
And that was actually more artistic than we would think, you know, as far as functional on a computer.
Yes.
He needed the artistic touch.
Would you ever create your own font, Bill?
No.
No, I would be interested in trying it, but I don't know if I could. But it is interesting to think about how the different things that we encounter can also be inspiration to us.
That's right.
Okay, so lots of different fields to consider as we talk about this question of copying, right?
Yeah, there are many fields like we see here. It stretches not just in technology being the obvious one because of Apple, Samsung. That's the thing that hits us right in the face. But as we dig into this, we've covered light bulbs, cooking, musicals, literature. It's almost in everything.
Right. Okay, and there's more to cover as well. There's more to learn tomorrow. And so I hope you'll come back and join us then for the final day of this article. Thanks for being with us so far. And in the meantime, of course, we would like to hear from you and discover what you think. Do you think copying is theft or innovation? How can they get in touch with us?
Well, they can go to our website, www.studioclassroom.com, and go to Advanced and write us a letter, letters@studioclassroom.com, or join the discussion at the English Corner, or go to our Facebook page.
So many ways to get in touch. We want to hear from you, so let us know your thoughts, and we'll see you again tomorrow. Goodbye.